Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
An Erios production.
Menopause is coming and the men have all left town, but I'm not giving up until I see that baby crown. 39 and single, can someone help me out? He could be bald and bearded, short or tall, funny, smart, love basketball, from gay to straight, black to white, tiny eyes with an underbite, I just need sperm.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, my loves. Before I get started, I gotta say, wow. Thank you so much for all the Patreon support this week. Shannon F., Nicole P. hyphen R. I mean, there's no hyphen, but PR sounded weird. Justine S., Daisy, Mindy L., Amanda S., Liz M., Bonnie L., SV, Becky G, Emily C, and Sarah S. Holy moly, that's a good week, everybody. These fine people and all the patrons who are already signed up had all the inside info as it went down this week. So now, let's catch the rest of you low-life non-subscribers up. I'm just kidding! I would never think that you're a low-life. I would just assume that you're as poor or poorer than me, or that you're going through fertility treatments. Or maybe you don't have a computer or a smartphone, or maybe fingers to type with. Or maybe you're off the grid and you don't use banks. Anyway, those would be the only reasons why you wouldn't subscribe, right? Okay, let's get everybody up to speed. Last week when I left you, I was expecting my 5-day embryo report on Tuesday, and my transfer was scheduled for Wednesday. But if none of my embryos made it to day 5, then there wouldn't be a transfer, would there be? So I waited around all day on Tuesday, and finally at the end of the day, I emailed Dr. Chung, who called me right away, and it turns out no one ever told me I was going to get a 5-day embryo report. I just made that up, I think because I know so many other women who have gotten 5-day reports. Nevertheless, she gave me my information.
What's up?
I got my embryo report.
What's up? Tell me.
The doctor is very hopeful. She thinks it's good.
Yeah, you better talk to Mom. She's going crazy.
You could do speaker.
Hey, girl.
Hi. She's very happy. So there's a total, there's basically a total of 4 that she thinks are good, that have potential. One is graded 4AA, and that's really good, she says. Then there's 2 that are 2BB. And that's...
What do those mean?
If you remember, there's the blastocele, the trophectoderm, and the inner cell mass. And so the number is the blastocele, and I think that means how much it's expanding. And I can't give you a better explanation than that. And then, then the letters are the trophectoderm, and one is the inner cell mass. But the 4AA is good to go. And tomorrow, maybe even bigger, which would be awesome. The 2 that are 2BB, they're just early blastocysts, which means they still have some growing to do. And then there's a 1, and they don't do grades on the 1s because they're not big enough. They can't see it. They're not, I don't know.
So the 4AA is ready to go, and 2 are so-so, and 1 is not ready.
But it could be tomorrow. Or they could leave it another night and then freeze it on Thursday or something.
Exactly.
And then the other 2, she said 1 is compacting, which means it's trying to become a blastocyst, and 1 is still in cleavage stage, which means it probably isn't going to make it to blastocyst.
Okay, so the 2 twos should be growing into a 3 or a 4 tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then there was the... Oh, God.
A 1. There's 1 with no grade, because they don't grade 1s.
Right.
But she said 4 out of 6 is really great, and she's very hopeful.
Well, congrats, babe. Here we go. So tomorrow you'll get your transfer. You might only transfer 1.
She'll definitely transfer the 4AA tomorrow, and then she'll transfer whatever, the best of the rest. Even if it's not mature, she would do 2 tomorrow.
Okay, but not 3?
No.
Okay, cool. All right, that's good. Molly, wow, one more day to relax.
No, tomorrow I relax all day long. So that was that. I hope you understood some of that. I don't have time to go over grading in this episode, but you can go and find it in one of my other episodes somewhere. All right. The next day was transfer day. I was feeling great. I woke up. I meditated. I went to acupuncture with J-Ron. My stomach felt fine. My mind was chill as hell. And I didn't need anyone to drive me back and forth or take care of me after the transfer because Dr. Chung doesn't require her patients to take Valium or have them do hardcore bed rest. But I did reach out to Selena, who you know from other episodes, and I asked her if she wanted to come along just for fun. And she said, yeah. So we met in the lobby and chilled for a while. And then they brought us to the back and I got dressed in my little gown and Selena got to wear this gorgeous Oompa Loompa surgical coverall situation. It was hot. Please, you can see those pictures on Instagram and Patreon. And then Dr. Chung came in and she said, I have good news. And I was like, oh yeah, I completely forgot about my embryos. How are they doing? Did they grow overnight? So the embryologist had chosen her favorite 2 embryos for the transfer. The 4AA from yesterday had grown to a 5BA, which is great. And one of the 2BBs had grown to a 4AA. Wonderful news. The other 2BB had grown to a 4CC, which is still cool. And the grade 1 had grown to a 4CC as well. Amazing. So those last two, the 2 4CCs, were frozen. And the Eensy Weensy 2, the one that was compacted and the other one that was still in cleavage phase, they didn't make it, but they tried so hard and I'm very proud of them. Oh, right, so that's when I got wheeled into the operating room and I got to meet the embryologist and it was so great to be in a room full of brilliant women, myself and Selena included, obviously. And here's the embryologist confirming that I am, in fact, Molly Hawkey and they're not putting the wrong embryos inside of me. And also, the audio is a little hard, but, you know, it's worth trying to listen to. And if you want to see the video, you can see it on Patreon. Patreon.com/spermcast.
I'll just ask you for your name and date of birth, please.
I'm Molly Hawkey, 82878.
Okay, and we are transferring 2 embryos today, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so here's a picture of the 2 embryos. Oh, and then we're going to see the lamb on the screen too, okay?
Awesome. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Now here's Dr. Chung.
Okay. So first thing you're going to feel, just make your ears in the spectrum, okay?
Is it okay if I put my hands behind my head?
Yeah.
She's put in the speculum, and the nurse is doing the ultrasound on my belly. My hoo-ha is fully exposed, but Selena swears she didn't see it.
Beautiful job with the bladder.
Thank you.
A lot because it basically makes it easier to see the uterus, and it also flattens it a little bit so that the angle to get the embryos in there is more straight.
Uh-huh. She's telling me I did a great job filling my bladder, that it really helps get the catheter in the right angle.
Just cleaning off the surface right now. Yeah. That's swabbing.
Covered with that progesterone.
I know. You're doing a good job. It's coating the surface beautifully. It's always nice to know that, right?
Yeah.
Hi.
So pretty.
Into the cervix.
Now that she's swabbed off the cervix, she's putting the catheter into the cervix. I don't feel a thing. She's a magician.
Move the embryos.
Ready to see the embryos on
the So now the lab tech in the other room is putting my embryos under the microscope and that showing up on a big TV screen so we can see the little embryos.
Look.
Oh,
that's
really hatching.
Yeah,
looks
Whoa.
Cool.
Hello.
Oh, how cool.
Thank you.
You
look really good.
They really are really beautiful, everybody. Oh, my goodness. All right, so then she points to the ultrasound monitor, and she tells us what we're going to see. You'll hear.
And we're going to see a bright white line traveling that direction, and then right here is where there's going to be a blush of white, and that's going to be the embryos going in.
And now we're just waiting for the embryos?
Yep. They're okay.
Now a cute little door that leads to the lab opens up and someone pushes my embryos through and then the embryologist takes them and she passes them to Dr. Chung and Dr. Chung puts them in the catheter and vroom! And there on the ultrasound monitor we can see that little flash of light in the uterus.
that bright white spot there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sweet spot. That's where the embryos are.
Cool.
Right? In the sweet spot. Because what we're seeing with the ultrasound is not actually the embryo, but the air and the fluid around the embryos. So right now what they're doing is checking the catheter under the microscope to make sure it's empty, and mm-hmm. that's how we confirm that the embryos are now seeing fluid inside of the uterus. So as soon as they say clear, we'll be all done, but that one's beautiful.
Awesome. Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yay.
Well, that was that. And if you want to see this video, like I said, you can see it on the Patreon. After that, I was escorted to the ladies' room where I was told to empty my bladder. I was slightly afraid that I was going to pee out the embryos, but the embryos weren't in my bladder. And Dr. Chung reminded me that the uterine walls are basically like two slices of bread slathered with thick, thick peanut butter smashed together, and that nothing is going to fall out of there. After peeing, the nurse brought me back to my little hospital bed, and Selena and I just hung out like we were having coffee, except I was horizontal and she was sitting in a chair. When we left, we said, we should do this again sometime. Back at home, I quickly got into my bed and had the best day on modified bed rest. I mean, it was kind of boring, but whatever. And I bet now you're wondering if I'm having any pregnancy symptoms. Well, if I am, I'm not paying any attention to them, because if I let my mind wander, it'll go way too far down either of the roads. You know, the I'm pregnant road or the I'm not pregnant road and I'm never going to get pregnant road. No, no, no. I'd rather just be here in the moment and hang out and have a good time, and whatever will be, will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. But the future will be ours to see on Friday, February 7th, when I go in for my blood test, and should be interesting. Of course, my patrons will be the first to know after I call my mom and dad and a couple of my best friends, other best friends, other than my patron best friends. Okay, it's time to start this interview with two incredibly strong parents and one incredibly strong baby. Now, I don't know if this is necessary, but just in case, I think I ought to give a little trigger warning, because this is the story of a premature baby, and if you're pregnant and anxious, this might not be the episode for you. But it's also an inspiring story and a hopeful story. Check in with yourself, and if you feel like you want to shut it off and join us next week, go for it. Now let's welcome Josie and Josie. Okay, listeners, I'm here with two people that have the same name and they're married. It's Josie and Josie.
Yep. That's right.
Nailed it.
Yep.
Let's talk about first how I know you.
Yeah.
So Josie, I met you, you think 2012?
2012, maybe 2011. Wow. But no later than 2012.
And we took headshots.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we've taken headshots several times since then, too.
In fact, you're all over my website.
I know.
And back then, you were dating this fella here, Josie.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Wait, don't you have a wild...
Oh, yeah.
So story about how
our first conversation, we met doing a tour of A Christmas Carol. And on the first day of rehearsal, we had sort of heard that each other existed in this cast. But when we first met, we were like, oh, hi.
I was like, hi. So you're Josie?
And I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. So you're Josie.
We could tell there was a, you know, pronunciation difference, if you will. And I said, great. Where are you from?
Montana.
That's my middle name. So I am Josie Montana McCoy.
And she is Josie from Montana.
So it's up to you. That's so cute.
Yeah. So that's
Isn't
our party
there
trick.
Something with your moms or something? Am I making that up?
Oh, so my older sister is Anne.
My older sister is Annalise.
Uh-huh.
And we're also 10 days apart.
6/18/88 for her, 6/28/88 for me.
Oh my gosh, you guys.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be hard to write.
You also are similar. You're not look-alike, but you're like similar somehow.
Yeah, we're alike.
You get that a lot.
We're alike.
Like, I wouldn't say you were brother and sister.
Yeah.
You know, big eyes.
Yeah.
Just gorgeous. similar wave in your hair.
Yeah, we're waiting for the curls to come in for Lincoln.
Who's Lincoln?
So Lincoln. Spoiler alert to our story. Lincoln is this baby that I'm holding in my arms.
Oh my gosh. Little miracle, huh?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely a miracle.
And you guys didn't have an easy time conceiving, right?
I mean, all things considered, I think we did in the moment. It felt like not an easy time.
Yeah.
We started in August
of 2018.
And we got our first first positive in January.
Okay.
But then we did have a loss in March.
Yeah.
Which was very, very hard, as you know.
So that was March 2019?
Yeah.
So I knew about that before I had my miscarriage.
Right.
And I think it was really helpful to hear you had written to me about what you'd been through. And I remember reading your story. Did I read it on the podcast? I might have read it.
You had read, I wrote that thing about the 2 week wait.
Oh,
that's what you read on the podcast.
Kind of a very poetic.
Listeners, well, now I can identify myself. That wonderful, I'm sure you think about it all the time. that wonderful piece about the 2 week wait, that was me.
Yeah, it was pretty great. She read it to me. It was really wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so I had read about your miscarriage. You had told me about it. Tell me what happened.
It was 8 weeks. Yeah, and we had been to the first ultrasound, and it was like, oh, can't really see anything. Come back in 2 weeks. And we were like, okay. And then we came back in 2 weeks, and it was like, oh, still, it's looking bigger, but still not really. Yeah. So then we had to do the, like, 2 days apart blood tests, and they were like, you're not going to get results until Monday. And I was like, oh. But then he got the test on a Saturday, and our doctor called us with the news, and...
Yeah.
And at the time I was doing this, like, I was doing a 15-minute version of the Pac-Man musical for like a 2-night only performance. And so like the first night of performances, I like knew this was a possibility, and I was like, it's not going well. And like, I'm just like sitting there backstage, like, oh. But then the second night, like, there I am, like, trying to do this Pac-Man musical when I've just found out that I'm like losing the pregnancy.
Oh,
I was like,
God.
This is like, this is life right here.
Terrible.
Yeah. So that was like.
And at this point, had you told anybody? And I feel like I'm looking at her a lot. You're welcome to talk, Josie.
Yeah, no, of course.
Well, you're not even holding the mic to your face when you say,
of course.
Thank you.
Yeah. And that was hard for me too, because I actually couldn't be there. I feel like I had a rehearsal or something.
Are you doing
I was doing something else. You know, so it was. It was really hard, as you know.
It's just people don't talk about it.
At that point, you hadn't told people that
you
were pregnant?
We had told my mom and dad,
your mom and dad,
our sisters, and a couple friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But we sort of knew, like, okay, we don't tell anyone that we can't untell, you know.
But Josie, didn't you say something about, like, you ended up telling your boss, and she had a similar story?
Yes. So now we've tried to really talk about it a lot more.
Yeah.
Just because it was so... I'm trying to burp this baby. You know, it was helpful for us. The people who had shared their stories with us, like, that helped us feel not so alone.
Yeah.
So now we try to sort of, like, pay that forward by telling people so that when it happens to them, they don't feel as alone either.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's amazing the number of people who said, oh, gosh, we went through that too.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
or
my sister.
Or we went through that twice. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I mean, and you don't hear about it. People don't talk about it. And so it's therapeutic to be able to open up to others and to let them know that they're not alone, because it did feel very lonely. It was a very lonely time.
Yeah. All right. So
we got pregnant right away again.
Great.
The luckiest thing.
Which, you know, there is the
benefit that, like, your body's a little bit more prepared, so you're a little more receptive.
Right.
Yeah. We knew we had, like, one shot. We were tracking all the apps, the ovulation, you know, all that stuff.
Because, like, it's not a regular, like, you can't even know exactly when. So it's only by ovulation kits that we knew.
Right.
Oh, wow, I think I am ovulating again.
This
could
be
off of the regular.
If we tried right now. And sure enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lucked out. And I was so surprised. So, like, the first time I told him I was pregnant, I, like, had wrapped up these, like, Packers jerseys for baby.
Packers.
And I, like, and I woke him up by, like, giving him, like, this package. The second time that I see the double lines, I'm, like, so surprised, and it's so faint that I, like, go over and I'm like, Josie, wake up. Josie, is this a line? Hey, do you see a line?
Yeah.
He's like, what? He's, like, terrified.
It's a very scary time, so waking up to a pregnant wife.
So then the second time going through that first trimester was
nerve-wracking,
terrifying. Yeah, because every single moment you're just like, is this gonna end again? Mm-hmm. It had been a missed miscarriage the first time too, so right. it wasn't even like, oh, there's no blood, like everything's fine, because it was like, well, there wasn't blood the first time either.
I never understand what that term means, missed miscarriage.
It means that the pregnancy is not continuing, it's not growing, but that your body hasn't noticed yet.
Ah, okay.
So your body doesn't pass everything out until you have medical intervention. Are you hungry?
He's so cute.
He's hungry still. Okay, I've got
the
more.
Monster.
Got more for you. So, yeah, we continued. And then once we got through to the second trimester, it was like, okay, take a breath. Like, this seems to be happening.
Yeah.
Still terrifying, but, you know.
He also told people in a very fun way. I don't know if you know that story.
No.
I don't think you do.
I wanna know.
I've had this idea for a long time, but I never knew how to execute it, about a reverse surprise party.
She brought it up to me a couple of years ago and was like, wouldn't it be funny if you invited a bunch of people over and acted like you were going to surprise somebody, but really you were surprising all the guests.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So we invited all of our friends over to what they thought was his birthday party.
Yeah.
And I was like, we're doing it a couple weeks early so that he won't suspect that it's, you know, that it's a surprise party. But in reality, like, he's like,
I was in on everything.
Helping me make the invite list.
This like secret Facebook group that she has going for it. And she's like filling me in on all these funny things that people are saying.
So then everyone, like 65 people show up.
Oh my gosh.
And we have friends, they're like filming everything, the best. They were in on it.
I've got two friends who have a YouTube channel. And so they have like all this great equipment. So they had two cameras on us. They had lav mics on us.
So my God, we walk in, the guests scream, happy birthday. Or they yell, surprise. And we yell, surprise. And open up a big sign that says, we're having a baby. And they were
there. Faces.
It was amazing.
That was great.
Perfect.
That's so fun. I've never heard of anyone doing that before.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm very proud of this idea.
It's all her. Yep. It's all her.
Wow.
Yeah. So so we make this like big grand splash announcement.
And what was that, around 12 weeks?
12 and a half, yeah.
Yeah.
And we had like just been to the like 12-week ultrasounds. We were like
before,
all clear. Everything looks amazing, great. And people start getting excited. Then we get to the 16-week ultrasound. Everything looks great. And then we got to the anatomy scan, which is like the really important one, and that's where they check for like all kinds of defects, how's everything looking, you know, illnesses. They're like looking for every little thing, and he keeps saying like perfect.
It was actually really fascinating. This guy like really loved.
This is your OB?
Our OB like brings in one guy one day a week
to do anatomy scans.
Oh, okay.
Like, he just goes around
like,
town doing anatomy scans.
He was just as amazed at the photos as we were. He was
as
like,
if this was
the first time he's seen the technology,
one.
Truly. He was like, oh, just beautiful. Oh my God, these, oh, it's just gorgeous.
Oh,
gorgeous, wonderful. This is great, guys. This is great. Oh, I just love this.
God, and that must have felt good.
So that was lovely. And so that was like right past 20 weeks.
I think it was 22 weeks because for some reason we ended up being later.
Yeah, having to wait, yeah.
Yeah. So 22 weeks, everything looks perfect. And then we hit 25 weeks and one day. And I'm at work, in my office, and I work with several great friends, and I just started saying to them, oh my gosh, I just feel like I've been pregnant forever because I've been pregnant all year. I'm like, I'm just starting to get uncomfortable. Like, oh, I'm almost in the third trimester, I guess, in a couple weeks. Like, I'm starting to feel this discomfort.
Mm.
And then I was just, my belly was uncomfortable. And I was like, Charlotte, feel how hard my belly is. And she was like, wow, yeah, I guess you're just getting super pregnant. And I was like, yep, this is near the end of the second trimester. And then, you know, like how you have to pee a lot when you're pregnant? Mm-hmm. I thought that this was just that. But suddenly I'm like, really having to pee a lot and like leaking a little bit, and I'm like, wow, I guess this is just pregnancy is crazy, right?
Oh my God.
So I'm like walking home from the train and I'm suddenly noticing, oh, you know what, this is getting worse, and I'm having to like stop walking every couple minutes.
Yeah.
Huh.
And she's telling me all this in text message, you know, I'm at work in Anaheim.
So finally I'm like, I'm going to call the doctor. You know, I just call the doctor's office line, and a different one of the OBs calls me back and says, I think you should just go in just go into the hospital, just check yourself into labor and delivery. And I, at 25 weeks, like, you're 14 weeks and almost 15 weeks away from full term. So, oh, like, we had not been thinking about the term, like, labor and delivery. We had not been on a hospital tour. Like, none, all of this was just suddenly like, oh, no, I...
We hadn't hit the third trimester.
Not even I mean, yeah, any of that.
So many milestones.
So she said that, and it was just like, oh, okay, okay. And she's like, just go and get checked out. You know, like, they love false alarms. And I was like, cool. Right. Yes, so do we. Great. So I called Josie and say, hey, so I'm on your way home from work. And just so you know, when you get here, I'm just going to hop in your car and we're going to go to the hospital. So just so you know. And then
I know when she called me to tell me, I was actually in the middle of a fantasy football draft. I had just drafted my first round player.
Come on, oh my gosh, Josie.
I know. So inconvenient.
Very inconsiderate.
No, I had actually pulled over on my trip home. I had pulled over in order to make my first pick.
And I do have to say, and this is such an important story, but I do have to say, I just found out that you work at Disneyland and you're in the Frozen show.
Yes. Yes. So cool. Sometimes play Olaf.
Oh, wow.
And have an ensemble track as well. So I'm down there at least 3 days a week.
Oh, it's pretty great. Pretty great. Yeah. Okay, moving
on. It's a lot of fun. Yes. I pulled over to make my first pick and then got back on the road. She calls me. And what she tells me is, you know, so this could be a false alarm. This could be a urinary tract infection. Right. This could be this. This could be that. Because those were some of the things that, you know, that they had mentioned to you on the phone.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Of course that's what that is. And I'm driving home and I still have 40 minutes to go probably. And of course, but yeah, we're going to the hospital, but there's no way that this is happening.
Yeah. So I like pack a hospital bag kind of, but like this is just not the kind of thing that we had thought about yet. So I don't really even remember what was in there, but not a lot of helpful stuff. And he picks me up. We get to the hospital and... Long story short, they test to see if my water has broken twice. And indeed, they're like, okay, your water has broken. Oh, here's the thing. We're going to try and keep you pregnant as long as humanly possible. And we hope that that's weeks. But you need to understand that you're not leaving this hospital until you deliver.
Oh, my God.
So we're like,
whether it's tomorrow or whether it's 15 weeks from now.
So we're like, okay.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And all this time, the contractions are getting worse.
Oh, you're having contractions.
Mm-hmm. Which I thought, like, the last thing I Googled on my work computer were like, what do Braxton Hicks contractions feel like?
Yeah.
Nope, these were not Braxton Hicks.
Right.
Yeah.
So the water is the amniotic fluid, right?
Yes.
So your baby needs that amniotic fluid for what? It's because the oxygen's coming from the placenta.
Yes. I actually don't really know the answer to that question.
Then you know what I'm going to have to do. The amniotic fluid has several functions. The fluid allows the baby to move around while it's developing. This movement allows for bone and muscle development. The fetus breathes the fluid in and out, allowing it to practice breathing and to aid in lung development. The fluid also helps to keep the fetus nice and warm by keeping heat in. It also helps keep the temperature consistent. The fluid offers protection from any blows that may come to the uterus area. It may cushion the blow if the mother falls, for instance. When the fetus swallows the amniotic fluid, it's practicing using and developing the digestive system. It also keeps the umbilical cord from being squeezed too hard. And lastly, the amniotic fluid also acts as a lubricant. The fetus's growing body parts are very fragile and could grow together, such as in the case of webbed fingers and toes, like in Waterworld.
But yeah, mine was just leaking. So it hadn't like fully rushed and broken.
It had not, yeah, it hadn't ruptured.
So then contractions continue. They check me in. We move to like the full waiting, you know, labor and delivery wing.
I got another question.
Yeah.
That you say they said whether it's in 15 weeks or if it's tomorrow or whatever, how do you think, is there a way for them to make it so that you don't give birth?
Yes. So the first thing that they did is put me on magnesium.
Okay.
And that is supposed to slow down labor.
And they tell you it's very warm. They're like, it's you're fine, but you're going to feel very warm.
And that was true.
It was a drip?
Yeah.
Okay.
So like all this stuff's coming through the IV and I'm just like, okay, this is my life now. I just have to page a nurse every time I have to go to the bathroom. Okay. So we're like settling in for this several weeks stay. They come in, they take a look at the baby. They do an ultrasound. But unlike when a doctor does an ultrasound tech can't like tell you what they're seeing.
Right.
So they're just like do this ultrasound and then leave. And then they're of course doing like like battery of blood tests. They're just like doing all the things that hospitals do in this situation. And at a certain point overnight, the conversation changes from we're going to keep you pregnant as long as possible to you have an infection in your uterus. Your placenta is detaching and we need to let this labor continue and get this baby out as soon as we can.
Oh my gosh.
And it's 7 a.m., you know, I'm on a cot next to her, and at 7 a.m. our doctor walks in, and thankfully he was there the next day because it was so, he walked in and it was like,
oh, okay, yeah. Great.
Yeah, no matter what happens, like our doc is here, he knows what's up. Like yeah. That was very comforting. But then mm-hmm. he took a look, and 60 seconds later, he's like, yeah, no, this is happening today.
Wow. Oh, well, so the other thing is the night before, as soon as it was clear we were delivering imminently.
12 to 36 hours.
They did us a huge favor, which is that they called in a NICU doctor to come and talk to us.
And this was like the head guy, too, at Good Samaritan.
It's like the attending, it comes down, and he's wonderful, and he just very gently and kindly talks us through
everything that might happen that might be difficult or that we might see, we hope to see, we don't want to see in the next 30 days specifically.
Yeah.
What that might look like, because we knew we were in for minimum, you know, him being in the NICU for 12 weeks, because they typically say that a NICU baby leaves the NICU around their due date, but they possibly see it happening around 37 gestational weeks. So we were like, okay, 12 weeks, maybe.
Okay.
Cool.
So we start to wrap our heads around all of this as much as we can, but we're also like, I at least am like in shock, and I have this like delivery coming up that I have to do that I have not taken childbirth classes for because I thought I had time because it was only 25 weeks. And they tell you, like, don't do it too early or you'll forget everything.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So then in the morning, they do us another favor, which is they say, now that you've had some time to think about this, do you want those NICU doctors to come back again? And we said, yes, please. Yeah, so they come back and they talk to us again, and we're like, okay. And then labor just, like, continues. I hadn't planned to get an epidural, but I did get an epidural, got some naps in, which I'm grateful for.
Good.
And then...
at this point, he must have been smaller than a big old baby. So does that make it less painful or no?
Okay, so here's all this time I was thinking like, well, okay, this is the one good thing. It's like he's tiny, so it'll be easier.
Uh-huh.
But what I had neglected to calculate is that also my body had 15 fewer weeks to prepare.
True.
So like my hips didn't spread out, like all that. I know.
Yeah. Yeah, dude.
So I think, like, relatively speaking, it was probably, like...
The same. Okay, so...
It did not feel easy at all.
No.
Yeah.
So he's born what time?
3:42 p.m.
Okay.
So I had started feeling uncomfortable on September 4th at about 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. And then at 25 weeks one day. And then at 25 weeks 2 days, 24 hours later, baby.
What did you just say? 2 days?
One day. Oh, so I was 25 weeks, 2 days.
Oh.
Yeah.
So exactly 24 hours later, this was so fast.
It was so fast. From like, from everything's healthy, you're going to be pregnant for the next 15 weeks to he's born.
Let's go to the hospital and check it out I'm going to go home and grab a few more things because she's going to be in the hospital for an indefinite amount of time. I just remember being so... sad and worrying about you so much driving back to the hospital.
So he's how many pounds when he's born?
2 pounds and almost a half ounce. Which a lot of people were like, 2 pounds 7 ounces, and we're like, no, 2 pounds 0.7.
just over
half an ounce. For 25 weeks 2 days is like ahead,
really.
Yeah, like 90 percentile or some 92 percentile.
So we really lucked out in that way.
And how long was he? What was his?
13 inches.
Yeah,
13 inches.
He was 13 inches, which I think was also like a 90 or 92 percentile. Like it was,
I'm just gonna look at this. Okay, 13, is that about right?
Yeah, that seems about right.
Yeah, about like that.
Mm-hmm. I was going to make a rude joke. I'm not going to do it.
You should go for it.
Average dick size. I'm not saying this on the podcast. Yeah. I'm cutting it.
That was my first thought, too. Yeah.
So like a little bit smaller than Josie's dick.
So it's just a hair under. Yeah.
Okay, I gotta keep it. Oh, that's not funny. So, that's so sick. What's wrong with me?
No, you have.
I'm looking at your sweet baby now.
You have to find the humor in this situation. Yes, you absolutely have to. We could not have survived otherwise.
Truthfully, you know, life is. I mean, fucking weird. Life is fucking weird. But life is funny, too. And you have to find those times. Yeah. Because I know in our ups and downs, and our sorrows and our joys, laughter was always there somehow, whether it was morbid or not.
Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
So he's immediately whisked away to the NICU.
Right.
Oh, my God. And that's the thing is they keep saying the first thing that they're going to do is they're going to take him away from you. They're not going to put him down on you. I'm sorry. We can't do that.
And we're prepared for that.
And so then all of a sudden he's born. And the first thing they do
is lay him on a towel.
Him on a towel on her. And so we're like, whoa. So this is like beautiful. And I mean, you can not only because we have photos, but I still remember her face of like, my baby's on me. And because we were just like certain, like, cool, we're rule followers.
Yes.
So we were like, great. He's going to be born. That's fine. And he's going to go right over there. The entire NICU staff was in the room delivered him.
I mean, there were a dozen people in there besides.
Because this is very early.
Extremely.
Can you impress upon everybody how early this is?
So, yes. A micro preemie is what they're categorized.
A micro preemie. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
In general, most hospitals put the cutoff at 24 weeks.
Okay.
Some hospitals now will like squeak it a little bit earlier if things are looking good. But most hospitals, the cutoff is 24 weeks.
What does that mean,
Where they consider that the fetus will not be viable.
Okay. So but the baby's born. What if the fetus is alive? They're not going to... I mean,
so it's mostly about intervention because at that age, no baby can breathe on their own.
Oh,
because the last thing that happens sort of in gestation that you need to survive is that you get surfactant in your lungs. So if you're born with like little to no surfactant, your lungs can.
You know, I don't know what that word means.
Oh, so it's basically like a lubricant for your lungs.
Okay.
So, you know, our lungs like contract and expand. Mm. And if you don't have surfactant, then when your lungs contract, they get stuck together.
Okay.
And they can't expand without help. So one of the first thing that happens to Lincoln is they put in a breathing tube, down his throat, a breathing tube that he would end up having for
two months. Oh, longer.
Longer than 2 months.
Longer than 2 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost three. Just probably two and a half months.
2.5 months. Mm. So that's like the big one about why babies typically don't survive around this kind of gestation.
Yeah.
And it's pretty new that a 25-weeker would make it.
Wow.
I would say like 10 years ago, our odds would not have been very good at all.
Wow.
Yeah. So he gets admitted to the NICU and we start this like new wild chapter of our lives at Good Samaritan Hospital, which is a wonderful, wonderful group of people over there.
Yeah.
The nurses are great. The doctors are great. And we would just go in. There were two chairs. So like you'd go in and they'd see us coming. They'd pull up the two chairs next to him. He was in an isolette. So incubator is what we sort of know it as.
They would also like give us their chair. You know,
a nurse would like stand up and be like, here.
And give us their chair. And then they go find one for the other one of us and one for themselves if they wanted it. In that nursery, there are probably 16 beds, 12 to 16 beds.
Wow.
And if there is a baby in each isolette, there is a nurse at the foot of each isolette. Like each baby had a nurse there.
Always.
Once you get a little better, then they start sharing nurses. And then you might have like, you're like, oh, hey. Two babies to a nurse. But for a long, long time, he was a single nurse baby.
Is there, at this point, are you guys afraid that he might not make it?
Yep. Okay. Oh, absolutely. Gosh. Very much. Yeah. And so the other thing is, it wasn't just for babies in general at this gestational age. It's, yeah, their lungs is the big thing. That was definitely still an issue for him. Mm-hmm. But
and when I was born, I was in the NICU for only three, I was in there for 3 days, but it was lung development. Ah. I was only 6 days early.
Oh my God.
But I was still in the NICU for 3 days.
Wow.
Because of lungs. So, I mean, I remember thinking, like, breathing's a big thing. Like you said, yeah. This is, and it's one of the final things, too.
But Lincoln also had, and still has, an intraventricular hemorrhaging, okay. Which is a bleed in his brain. Okay. And it's pretty hefty. I don't know. Yeah. Hefty. Severe,
the,
I guess.
Severe. The severity, they deal in grades.
Okay. And it's grades 1 through 4. On one side, it's a grade 3, and on one side, it's a grade 4.
And so 4 is the most severe. Okay. So, yeah, the left is a 4, the right is a 3.
And they've been tracking this since. There's still a possibility that he'll have to have some kind of intervention.
Okay.
But as of right now, it's like we're still just tracking everything really carefully. But really the thing is we won't know exactly how this will affect him until there's like a milestone that is coming up and like, oh, he's should be, you know, trying to hold his head up by this point. And he's not holding his head up.
Right.
And so that's how we'll know. I mean, he is really trying hard to hold his head up right now.
And then, of course, like his head was pretty sturdy when you were burping him.
Yeah.
I use that example because it's one that, he does seem to be really good at. Yeah.
Because then there's also the difference in development of, like, his actual age versus his corrected age.
Right. And right now, okay.
So let's explain that. Yeah. So his birthday is September 5th.
Right.
Which is my mom's birthday. So happy birthday, Mom. 3.5 months early.
Here's a grandchild.
Yeah.
But his due date was December 17th. Oh my gosh. So when we look at his milestones, it'll be a lot more based on December 17th.
Right.
So he'll always have like 2 ages until he's like 3 years old, basically, when they kind of, he should match up by that point. Right. So like right now, developmentally, he is a month and a half old.
Uh-huh.
But we've had him for almost 5 months.
Yeah. That's so wild.
He's so early. It's like we've had him for 5 months and I'm still just like, he was so early. Like, sometimes it just hits me. Like, that's crazy. Yeah, so there's the bleed in his brain that we're tracking. Mm-hmm. He also had an open PDA, which is a duct between the heart and the lungs. Mm-hmm. And it's very common for it to be open in preemies, and often they close on their own.
Okay.
They were just, like, tracking it pretty carefully, and they kept just saying, like, we're going to wait. So we spend 22 days at Good Samaritan Hospital, and...
Well, and sorry to jump in.
No, but yeah,
the second day of his life,
oh my God.
I'm
still in the hospital.
Yeah, we were in the hospital room, and the phone rang, and this led to a lot of this anxiety, but it was the beginnings of a lot of anxiety for the NICU, really, because the phone rang in the hospital room, and you knew that that wasn't like...
There's no... No one.
You knew that
no
it was like it
us.
Was specific. So I picked up, and they're like, "Hi, could you please come upstairs? Your baby's had an episode." And I was like, "Okay, yes." And so I just hung up the phone. And I said, "Hey, we're going to go upstairs." They said
the baby wasn't in the NICU.
No, he was upstairs.
He was upstairs.
We were recovering downstairs.
So gotcha. she was in the postpartum area downstairs because the NICU at Good Samaritan is 2 hours at a time, but we can be in there any time except for shift change. Mm. And they're very lax on these rules too because they understand that it's parents and their babies, but we're also rule followers, like I said, so we are very good about this. So we're down in the room.
Yeah, so we are like, okay, and we get up there and there's the hand washing station, you know, but somebody intercepts us before the hand washing station and says,
when we were like pressing the button for the double doors to open there, she's scanning in and then she sees us. She's like, "Oh, your baby." And like runs with us the rest of the way
past the hand washing station.
So like she was running in because she knew that our baby was having this episode in the same way that we knew our baby was having, but we didn't know what it was. So we get there and
people all around him.
There are 5 people around the isolette, lots of beeping going on. And basically they like calmly, like one of their many wonderful nurses just pulls us aside while it's all going on and says, you know, basically he had a pulmonary hemorrhage.
Okay.
And they had taken the breathing tube out. I think that they had tried very early on to maybe like see how that would go, and it didn't go so well. Basically his lungs collapsed.
Filled with blood.
Yeah. So all of a sudden out of his nose and mouth it just started to bleed a little bit. So
And you saw this?
No, that okay. was what the episode was. So they okay. sort of rushed us up there, you know, sort of in a sense of like, we don't know what's going to happen. Like, please get up here. Because then it was less than 30 minutes later that same wonderful head of the sort of head doctor in the NICU told us, you know, this is very rare. We see this in babies here about once a year.
Oh. And at this point, I, you know, we haven't pointed this out, but we can't hold him.
Right.
We can hardly touch him.
Right.
Yeah, and that was another thing. When he was first delivered and they throw him on him, and we're like, well, that's crazy. Then they take him over there and they do all these things. That same head NICU doctor says, do you want to touch him? And I was like, can I? I thought like, is that okay? Can yeah. I? Like, yeah, touch his little hand. But that was like the most touch Contact. That in the first 5 minutes he was born, that was the most touching we did for the first 3 days.
Yeah.
Even. Gosh.
So it's this like tiny little baby and we haven't gotten to hold him. We've hardly gotten to interact with him at all. And that ended up being, I mean, partly the reason I forgot about it is because it ended up sort of just being like a blip on the radar, right. except for it did set us up for a lot more anxiety, I think. Yeah. So that happens. And then we just visit as often as we can. And we start to fall in a little rhythm. We fall in love with every nurse and every doctor mm-hmm. there. We are like, this is the best and only place we ever want to be. And then one day we're resting at home and I'm pumping because I pump right. breast milk.
Side note, Josie ended up donating 1,229 ounces of breast milk to the Mother's Milk Bank in San Jose. She says in an email, they pasteurize it and distribute it primarily to hospitals for preemies whose moms don't have a supply. She also has 2,500 ounces tucked away for Lincoln in two huge freezers, one at home and one at work.
Right.
We had just come home from the hospital. Uh-huh. So we had just been there. We had seen him. We come home. We had been here for 15 minutes, I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. You're pumping.
And the phone rings and it's Good Samaritan. And the doctor says, yeah. So I just looked at his last cranial ultrasound and I think we need to transfer you guys to Children's Hospital Los Angeles. So I called their transport team and they're going to be there this afternoon. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get a call from them.
Helicopter?
No.
Bus. Yeah. Ambulance. So they're like, you know,
a city bus is coming.
Maybe I watched too much Law and Order. Yeah, so they're like, if you can get here, one of you can ride with him.
So we're like,
great. And I'm like, yeah, you can ride with him. I'll take you there. So I take her to Good Samaritan.
And they're like, it's going to be like within an hour. So we're like, rush, 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 rush. I don't bring my pump parts because I'm like, well, we're going to be over at the new place soon. So like Josie has my pump and the pump parts. No. 6 hours.
I waited in the lobby and at Home State. Thank you, Home State. I'll just plug them really quickly on Hollywood Boulevard.
Shout out Potato Tacos.
They're very close to CHL.
Potato they Tacos are. Got us through this.
That's right. That's right. Thank you. But for 6 hours, I waited for them. And, you know, in text message, but I know, but like it was just second or third most stressful day of my life that it all happened.
Which is stressful for me also because I'm like sitting looking at what is now a like 3 pound baby, I think.
Yeah.
Probably.
And I'm just like, how are you going to get through this ambulance ride? And I'm stressed. And then I get stressed when I'm like overdue for a pump. Like that definitely like stresses my body out anyway. So then it's like amplified by the fact that I'm like, all of this is going on. And
again,
I'm like, why did I not
followers.
Bring parts?
8 times a day. She wants to get those 8 times a day in. Yeah.
Every 3 hours.
It's like the one thing you can control.
Yep. Right. It's the one thing you can do. Absolutely.
All we can do for him is pump this breast milk and
all I
I'm
could do was wash
like
the breast
champ.
Pump parts.
Yes, yes.
I was very helpless, but that's what I could do.
Yep.
So you were at Good Samaritan waiting
for the ambulance ride.
She was at one hospital, I was at another.
Uh-huh.
So finally, they whisk in and it's like 5 people. And here's the thing about Children's Hospital Los Angeles. Everyone there is like beautiful.
It's kind of crazy.
They're like straight out of Central Casting, like Children's Hospital.
First of all, it's on Sunset Boulevard. So it's like, it's Hollywood Hospital.
But they come, this transport team comes in, and I'm like, is this real?
Is this
like,
General this Hospital? Looks,
like, where are the cameras following you guys? Because it's just like this beautiful
it's so
team.
Because Days of Our Lives, no, General Hospital and Grey's Anatomy do film right in Los Feliz in the same neighborhood.
It all makes sense.
And they
sense.
Must use
and
the
they,
same.
Sometimes they walk to lunch from, I mean, because they walk right by my house. Well, I can't say where I live. Anyway, the nurses, people walk by my house in scrubs, but they're not real doctors.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, so then they like pack him up and then they bring me all of the breast milk that I had waiting in the refrigerator and they whisk us off and we get to Children's Hospital Los Angeles. The ambulance ride was like actually kind of uneventful. I was just like staring. I'm in the front seat, you know, like staring in the back seat at him the whole time.
Yeah.
But
no
I can
sirens,
hardly
right?
see him. No sirens.
Lights, but no sirens.
Lights, but no sirens. Back roads, you know, just like nice and easy.
Uh-huh.
And we get there and like he's the same. You know, at this point, he's 3 weeks old, which means he's 28 weeks. He's not, he kicks.
Okay.
He's on a breathing machine called an oscillator that he like can't move very much
mm-hmm.
because of the way that it's helping him breathe.
Mm.
So at this point, also, it's like hard to tell more or less like how he's doing
right.
at any time because he's not, you know, he's still like in this constant sleep kind of.
And he'd been transferred for the travel. He had been transferred to what they call a mobile NICU. Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Which
okay.
is just so, like this tiny.
Kind of like a little hospital gurney, you know,
yeah.
But. Enclosed
and tiny, tiny.
Yeah, so, and it's oh got God. All of the things. So it has its own oscillator built in, and the oscillator like is this has this constant sound by his bedside, of like, and it sends like vibrations of air into the lungs. So it doesn't like fill them up to a full inhale and a full exhale. It sort of fills them up halfway, and then like blasts little waves
vibrations
of air,
yeah.
so that his chest just vibrates. So that Josie and I make sure to tell people when they get to see him, like, hey, just so you know, there's all these beeps, there's these things. Also, his chest is going to be vibrating. That's totally normal. Don't worry about
and
it. That's the oscillator.
That was the whole time or just right in the
That was
in
for the first
transfer time.
No, that was for the first like 5-6 weeks.
Okay.
It was for almost 2 months, yeah.
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 Oh, yeah. So after we got to Children's Hospital, at a certain point, they took him off the oscillator. Mm-hmm. We got to hold him for the first time.
Yeah.
And then he got put back on the oscillator and we couldn't hold him anymore,
aww.
Which was like almost harder
than
waiting.
Less than 3 days later, like they put him back on the oscillator.
He just wasn't, he like, wasn't developed
wasn't
as
doing
much
well.
As they thought.
Yeah.
Okay.
He wasn't able to maintain a healthy oxygen level.
Weaning off oxygen is just like, it's, you know, it's a trial and error process. We went through a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah.
So we get to Children's Hospital Los Angeles and like, it's like a whole new world. Not only is everyone TV beautiful there.
Not that
like
everyone
said,
a Good Samaritan isn't
no,
gorgeous.
No, no.
We love you.
Yes,
oh.
yes. But the hospital there too is also just like, it's shiny and colorful and it's for kids
yeah.
and there's therapy dogs and everything is like branded. It's like, it's not a cafeteria. It's the HBO cafe. Like,
stop.
I'm serious.
Every floor has a sponsor. Like we were on the Walmart and Sam's Club floor. There was a Costco floor. Yeah.
There's Panda Express
I rolled
floor.
My eyes for
what?
The
yeah.
for those listeners.
It's just like a whole new world. But the best part was that instead of it being like one big room where they would pull up those two chairs for us, we had a couch that turned into a bed. And we had two drawers. We could keep stuff there. We could hang out there.
And
there were breast pumps everywhere.
It was no longer the like only 2 hours at a time. So we at CHLA, the NICU floor is singles and double rooms.
Mm.
The smaller babies that are on the inside, not by the windows, so that they can sort of regulate day and nighttime as they want
mm-hmm.
for them. They're toward the inside. And they're in singles. And then as you develop and as you get stronger, you move
to
a double.
Okay.
Outside where the windows are. So
there's all kinds of these like milestones you never think are milestones where you're like, oh, we're never going to be that baby in the outer ring. Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
And then one day it happens. You're like,
we're here.
I'm not ready. Oh, my God.
I'm not ready.
Yeah. Is he ready? What? Yeah.
So why did they have to move him to CHLA again?
For neurosurgical oversight.
Okay.
Basically, CHLA has a dedicated neurosurgery team.
Mm-hmm.
And so they could be with him and check him out 24/7.
And we also knew that because he had that open PDA, we
uh-huh.
knew that if it didn't close on its own, that we would have to go to CHLA to close it.
Mm.
Because that they're like specialists over there.
And remind me, that's between the heart
between
and the lungs?
Between the heart and the lungs.
I think it's a patent ductus arteriosus.
Oh, my brother had that.
Patent.
Yeah.
Patent
yeah.
ductus.
Yeah.
yeah.
My brother had that. He had surgery at 4. What, he had it in 69? No,
he was born in 16. He had it in about 73.
Yeah.
And back then, they didn't have a good prognosis for it. So it was now they do it all the time.
Yo!
Hey, real quick. When you had that heart surgery, was that like open heart surgery?
No, closed.
So where did they, how did they do it?
They slice you open and they...
But you have a scar around your chest, but when...
I have a scar around my chest.
But it's not considered open heart surgery?
Open heart means they cut the heart.
Oh, okay. I hear you. Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
So if they don't cut the heart, it's closed heart.
Okay.
In my case, they did not cut the heart.
And what's the story with your doctor? He was like the first doctor to do this surgery or something? Or you had a new type of surgery?
No.
No? Okay, I'm going to ask Mom real quick. It comes up in the podcast.
Do you want to call me back again so I can sound smarter?
No. You sound very smart. I sound stupid. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello?
Hey, Mom, real quick question.
Yes.
When Adam had his surgery...
Yes.
Wasn't there some special... At that time, weren't PDA surgeries really more dangerous than they are now?
Oh, God, yes. It was a complete, you know,
Oh, you're cooking Dad's scallops. I'm so sorry. You can go.
Don't move. I'm going to do this. Oh, my God. Scallops. It was so complicated. I thought it would be easy.
Oh, my God.
Boy, I got
to
go.
Okay, goodbye. Love you.
Bye.
Well, look, I didn't learn a lot from that, but gosh, my brother and my mom are so cute. Also, happy 89th birthday to my dad. He's just going to love those scallops. And, oh, everybody, my dad's doing really well. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and so he probably had to have, like, an actual surgery,
yeah,
right?
For sure.
Yeah.
Because in 2019, they have a new procedure that they can do with a catheter.
Wow.
So instead of having to cut him open, they put a catheter in.
In the wee-wee?
Through his...
It's called a catheter, but it's like more...
In an artery.
It was through his leg or yeah.
Like through
or,
his okay, groin.
My brother
groin.
Might have had, you know what? My brother might have had that one.
Well, no, because they didn't do it
until
2019.
This was literally the FDA approved this like 7 months ago.
My so brother's a baby.
So we like super lucked out that they didn't have to like cut him open and do the surgery. Like they just had to do this. And it was still terrifying, you know, but... Ugh. You know, yeah, so it's like terrifying. This catheter that goes in like his thigh and all the way up to the heart. They placed the device. It didn't go.
Oh, so they did it. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, they did
brain.
It.
They place a little, what they call a button. Yeah. They place a little button there to sort of close up.
Okay.
A or a hole. Piccolo. They also call it a piccolo, which is cute.
Yeah, piccolo both procedure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they judge mainly based on his blood pressure to see how it's closed and how it's affecting the blood flow to the brain, to the rest of the body below, et cetera.
And that was, it
Did
was
he have
a
to
turning
be
point.
Under anesthesia?
Yeah.
Scary.
At several points.
For a long time he was on.
For at least 2 months he was on at least some tiny
fentanyl.
Bit of fentanyl.
Oh my God.
Because on that oscillator they can't move too much.
Yeah.
Or so it like disturbs
you. Have to be chill.
Yeah.
And so that was
imagine.
Very fun.
I just can't imagine the amount of stress you guys have been under every single day of his life so far.
Yeah.
I mean, more or less, yeah. So one thing that we really attached to early on is singing to him and music.
Good.
And we got a book of poetry from my sister, and that was just like our lives for a long time. It's just what can we do? We can sing to him, we can read to him, and I can pump breast milk. Like that, this is our toolkit.
And so when we would have people come and meet him, like, you know, because they could only come one at a time with one of us, not both of us, in Good Samaritan, what we would do is we would open up a little isolette and we would have them tell Lincoln one thing he had to look forward to about the outside world. And then also we'd had them sing him a song. And we could sing with them or, you know, for them, whatever. Yeah.
That is so sweet.
Which I think is good, like, advice if anyone has a NICU baby, it's like find as many little rituals
right.
as you can.
Yeah.
Find those things that can ground you in some way, even yeah. if they don't make any sense.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other examples of like things we did, but
I mean, I know that the nurses and doctors were so happy just us singing to him.
Yeah. Yeah. And they said they don't get a lot of that, even though it's like really helpful.
But even to the point of like, you know, they would, our parents could tell that we were known for singing in the NICU. Like, doctors would say, well, maybe we should shop you around to the other babies, you know? Come on. You sing to all these guys and ladies.
Speaking of the other babies, did you get to know any other parents that were in there?
Or,
or were you the only ones visiting your baby?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, that is an interesting question. At times it maybe feels like that, but also everybody's on different schedules, so it's hard to say.
Oh, okay. And when I know, but we're sort of telling ourselves this.
Because we had, at CHLA, we had some roommate babies who were just, pretty much wouldn't get visited for...
And, you know, you never know if... If that is because of their parent lives here, or they're in high school and they're in class, or if they live in Modesto, California,
because they were transported
here.
It's the top children's hospital in the Western United States, and they have so many specialties that you might get flown in for.
Yeah.
You know?
Specifically for neonatology, I think.
Yeah.
And probably a host of other accolades.
But, but yeah, there were a lot of babies in there that didn't get a lot of visitors, which is hard, but there were the babies
who mom was always there, dad was always there, you know. And
I think the best way to kind of wrap this up is like there was a woman who we roomed with for a while who I would see around the hospital then and, you know, say, oh, how is your son doing? And she would tell me, and then she would say, how is Lincoln doing? And I would tell her, oh, okay. And then one day I ran into her and we shared all of this stuff, and they were really going through a really tough time there. And I had known they had the surgery and it was delayed, like all this horrible stuff. And, you know, we were just talking about how hard it is, how awful it is. And we're like, okay, well, I'll see you around. All right. And I was like, oh, what's your name? And I just realized we both laughed because I was like, oh, we know like so much. Like she had been in the room when we had talked to a family psychologist because we saw a family psychologist for a while, which is great. Two different times. So she knows all of our dirty laundry and stuff.
Yeah.
But like we had never found out each other's first names. And like, I think that kind of wraps up like this NICU family. Like even people you don't talk to, you like see them in the halls a lot. And eventually you just sort of like nod at them and you're like, oh yeah, that's that family. Mm-hmm. I think their baby's over in the Pearl District. And so his total stay was 4 months and 17 days. He was there for over a month past his due date.
So how long has it been since you came home?
We've been home for 10 days.
Yep. And he's got oxygen.
Yep. So he's on half a liter of oxygen for you doctors and nurses listening in, which is not a lot. Like 2 liters is the most.
Okay.
And a quarter is the least. And he actually only needs it when he's asleep. But you know how like grown-ups take like an hour or two to get into REM sleep? Newborns go into sleep. REM sleep immediately.
Oh, okay.
So he has to wear it and have it on all the time because like he could fall asleep at any moment.
Oh, so when you're in REM, your lungs are just too relaxed?
Basically, yeah. It's obstructive sleep apnea, I think it's what it's called.
Okay.
So this is a lot better than like where he was initially, you know, and there was like all these steps of weaning him from the oscillator to just the ventilator, from the ventilator to CPAP, from CPAP to this nasal cannula, and then weaning that down from 2 liters to a liter and a half to now a half. Yeah, so getting used to the home oxygen has been like pretty interesting.
Well, you've got a long cord. Mm-hmm. This cord is how long?
50 feet.
50 feet?
That's what you told me.
25. Yeah.
Really?
50 feet. We could definitely get him into the kitchen.
Yeah, I guess so. You're totally right.
You could go to home state.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, potato tacos.
Lincoln, you want a potato taco?
So he's got this long cord, and then he's got the tape on his cheeks, and it's just poking into his nose, but it's not going down his sinus.
Right. Yeah, so it's very unobtrusive. It's very soft.
You ever take a huff off of it?
Pure oxygen, now baby, gets you real high.
Take advantage. But it's pretty interesting. And, you know, there are, like, terrifying moments where, like, he's a newborn. He's very grabby.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not a new... He's...
Right.
I keep saying
he's 5 months old.
I'm going to be saying that in 5 years. I'm going to be like, he's a newborn. You know,
I think he's a newborn, though, right? Month and a half is still a newborn or no?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now, we have to tell everybody what he weighs.
Oh, yeah. So now he weighs, well, I guess last Tuesday he weighed 10 pounds and 14 ounces.
Yes!
Yeah.
He's such a big boy.
So that's up, you know, like over 5 times his birth weight.
I which suspect is he's really at 11 great. Now.
Yeah, he probably
big
is.
Big boy.
Mm-hmm.
Big boy.
Yeah, so he's doing really well. The PDA is closed. He might have to have eye surgery at some point.
Okay.
Because he also has ROP, which is retinopathy of prematurity, which one of our nurses told us is the reason that Stevie Wonder is blind.
Get out.
Yeah.
Basically, like a lot of times, premature babies, like the only problem they end up having down the line is eyesight.
Oh.
Because early, you're not supposed to have too much oxygenation of your blood.
Oh.
And too much oxygenation, like 100%, will affect your eyesight.
Can I ask about the, what did you call the brain stuff?
IVH.
IVH.
Yeah.
What was that for? Stand for again?
Intraventricular hemorrhage.
Okay, so what happens with that? What are you looking toward?
Basically, they say that the blood will eventually resorb. Is that the way they put it? The blood will be absorbed into the body, into the body eventually. So that's like not to worry. But basically, the big worry is if that blood is taking up too much space in the ventricles of the brain, that leaves less room for the cerebral spinal fluid, the
all of your brain fluid.
Yeah, all of the brain fluid to be able to flow through that ventricle.
Okay.
They said what we're on the lookout for is developmental delays, learning delays, and possible cerebral palsy.
Okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, again, we just won't really know until things come up and he can't do certain things.
And so draining it is not, it's too big of a deal to just do.
So it's actually not big of enough of a deal yet to drain. So that'd be if he starts developing, they track his head circumference really closely. We feel to make sure the top of his head remains soft. And if either of those start to, go the wrong way, then they'll put a shunt in to drain the blood.
Okay.
But we've just sort of been sort of tiptoeing on the line.
And when's your next visit?
We see neurosurgery every month now.
Okay. Every 4 weeks.
So we left the hospital with follow-up appointments with ophthalmology, cardiology, pulmonology, neurosurgery.
Oh my God.
And a good old-fashioned pediatrician.
What?
Which was so wonderful. Like, I took him to that appointment and I was just like, I feel so normal, coming in and,
got
it was
my
just
10-pound
like
baby.
The most normal, and of course we talked about like all the million, things and on the radar, but
you had mentioned that, you told our story to a doctor friend of yours
or something.
And they were like, wow. I think it was kind of the same thing. You said that our doctor was on the phone with CHLA folks.
And she kept saying to them, okay, so is that all? Oh. Oh, is that all? Oh, okay. Anything? Okay, that too. Okay. But then when we got in there, she, after her examination of him and watching him do tummy time and stuff, she was like, okay, he's actually a lot. She's doing a lot better than I thought.
She was impressed, which is, nice.
Yeah.
Good.
Nice for
proud
us.
Of him.
Very proud of him.
And CHLA, I can't say enough good things about that hospital. Yeah. The way that they support families and the nurses there, just yes, of course they took amazing care of Lincoln and they also took care of us.
Yeah.
And they showed us so many things about how to take care of him as a regular baby and as a NICU baby, and coached us. And we also went out of our way also to ask them for advice and be like, hey, instead of you doing that, can I do it? And you give me notes on it.
Yeah.
And that has made the transition home a lot easier.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like we just got this incredible professional training.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously we didn't want to be in the NICU for 4.5 months.
No.
Yeah.
I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy.
Truly. No. But it was also the best care. Nobody has a job in a NICU because it's there's an opening at the NICU. I guess
I'll
apply.
I guess I'll do
these
that.
These are
people who do this for a reason. And I was given the advice early on, and I would have done this anyway because they're so smart and caring. But a friend of mine who went through this and his baby was 2.5 months early, he said, trust the NICU nurses inherently.
Mm. We had primary nurses, which is incredible. And we had one who we had for 2 months, we had Zayani, and then she moved to Lincoln, Nebraska, which is just too perfect. I know the day she told us, I was like,
And not what? Only that, like, she moved to Lincoln, yes, but also Lincoln is in Nebraska, where Josie and I met.
You too.
This so is where like, we met. So, yeah, so that's fun.
And then she left, and we got two more primary nurses who were also just wonderful. But when we left, you know, like we had spent all of our time and built all those relationships in the NICU, yeah. especially with those primary nurses. And so on our way out, he's like in the car seat, and we stopped at the NICU. And it happened to be that both our day and our nighttime primary nurses were working during the day. So that they came to the front desk, and some of the charge nurses were there.
There were, right. I mean, legitimately, besides us and besides the nurse that was kind enough to drop us at the NICU floor first, that was helping us with all our things.
Yeah.
There were like nine nurses
and staff members. Lincoln.
All of them having the same conversation. Oh, it's just all talking to Lincoln at once. Oh, and it was just so like, and the nurse who was with us was like, I'm apparently discharging a very popular baby. Right now, she's right. She's right.
Yeah, but they were very sweet.
So wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, I'm so happy you guys have him home now.
Yeah.
It's nice to have everybody home.
I'm so happy. Yeah. Okay, so when might the oxygen be done?
We just really don't know.
No.
There's a possibility he'll be on it for the rest of his life.
Wow.
But at a certain point, it will switch to only at night if that's the case.
Uh-huh.
But right now, yeah, he just. I mean, he's been sleeping through this whole interview. so he just like sleeps so much that he has to have it all the time.
Yeah.
But they said there could be a point, you know, if like if he's sitting up eating Cheerios, like you can take it off of him.
Right, right, right.
But yeah, we'll just sort of track that with our follow up.
And for now, we 6 months after discharge, we have an appointment with pulmonology.
Okay.
And so 6 months, we'll reevaluate
in
the oxygen.
1 month. We have one appointment in 1 month from now.
But is that to that's not to reevaluate the oxygen.
Yeah.
I thought that was 6 months.
I mean, I think they reevaluate as they go. Yeah.
I am all about that.
Yeah.
I thought that they were going six straight months.
That would be interesting.
I don't think so. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, and they'd say the rule of the NICU is one day at a time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I would definitely fall out of that. And also every NICU parent should go to therapy.
Yeah.
That's my other soapbox. But yeah, one day at a time is like the rule. Sometimes 1 hour at a time, but one day at a time is the most.
And every little victory.
Every time you get to hold him, first time he gets to wear clothes, first time he gets to take a bath, like all of these things are just like bring tears to everyone's eyes.
And everybody knows about it. You check in and you sign in at the front desk and you've still got 250 feet to walk to your room. But somebody's like, hey, heard Lincoln's off his breathing tube.
And it's like, hey, I heard Lincoln tolerated his full feed today.
Stopped in to see Lincoln earlier. He's looking good, gaining weight. Oh, you know, like everybody's like sort of involved in it. And it's a beautiful
really
community.
Special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really happy for you guys.
Thank you.
You have to keep me posted on all the milestones.
Yeah, we
absolutely.
Will.
Okay. Thank you so much for telling us all that story.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you
for
letting
us
share.
You're welcome.
Love
thank you again.
Your story too.
Oh, me? Don't little old me. Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, they're absolutely wonderful. And thank you guys so much for sharing that story with all of us. Josie sent me a couple pictures. I'm going to put those on the Instagram of little baby Lincoln the day he was born. And then a picture of him now to show you how much he's grown since then. Also, I asked her if it was really inappropriate to keep that dick joke in the podcast. And she said I should definitely keep it in. Okay? This is a long episode, so I'll be quick. Thank you, Josie. Thank you, Josie. Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Adam, my brother. Thank you, Dad. Thank you, Dr. Chung. And thank you, embryologist, whose name I don't remember. Thank you, Selena, for coming with me to the transfer. How fun. As for pregnancy, we'll see what happens on Friday. I'll post those results on the Patreon as I get them. But, you know, keep those fingers crossed. But another way you can support without having to give any money is by going to iTunes and rating, reviewing, and subscribing, of course. If you want to reach me, email me at spermcast@gmail.com, text me at 323-741-1818, or leave a voicemail at the same number. You can also follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Spermcast. That's it. Love you all.
He could be bald and bearded, short or tall, funny, smart, love basketball, from gay to straight, black to white, tiny eyes with an underbite, I just need sperm cast.
An Erios production.
Powered by Acast.
Even
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.